Welcome to the Benefits Executive Roundtable, hosted by Dorothy Koshu, President of Advanced Benefit Consulting. Dorothy is a nationally recognized benefits and compliance consultant and group health broker. Here, you'll listen to industry experts break down the latest news and trends in employee benefits, healthcare reform, regulations and compliance, all designed to empower executive decisions.
Welcome to the Benefits Executive Roundtable podcast. I'm your host, Dorothy Koshu, President of Advanced Benefit Consulting, and I want to welcome my guest today, Sue Wakamoto-Lee, Regional Sales Manager of Claremont Insurance Services, and that is a general agency which is used by a lot of health insurance agencies, as well as she's a past president, immediate past president of the California Agents and Health Insurance Professionals. I also have with me today David Franklin, Senior Account Manager of EBA and M Corporation, which is a Southern California-based third-party administrator. Welcome, everyone.
Thanks, Dorothy. It's great to be here. Getting to do another podcast with you is always a fun opportunity. So thanks for inviting me.
Oh, you're welcome. It's always fun. Sue has been with us before, and she is a friend of mine, very close personal friend. And I just really enjoy having you on here, Sue. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks, Dorothy. I'm excited to be here. And whether you're an employer, an employee, or simply curious about how HRAs work, you're in the right place.
Thank you very much. Well, thanks very much for being here. As you know, inflation is still very high. The costs of everything continue to increase. And every time you walk into a grocery store or purchase any basic goods or services, you see it. I can't believe it every time I walk in. It kind of still baffles me when I look at how much the register is saying that I owe when I buy one simple bag of groceries or something. Of course, the cost of health insurance keeps going up as well because let's face it, as most of us know, the cost of health insurance goes up because the cost of medical care charged by providers keeps rising. So we're going to talk today about a way that fully insured employers, although self-insured employers can do this as well, but those are fewer and further between because they automatically have some cost containment built into them generally. But this is a way that you can save money on those fully insured renewals coming up this season. And by being a little bit creative with how you offer their health benefits and not being afraid to make some changes. So to help me explain how, I brought in a great team that we work with using HRAs to lower benefit costs. Let's start from the beginning. Sue, what is an HRA and what's the difference between an HRA and an HSA?
It gets really confusing, doesn't it, Dorothy? Because in our industry, we love our acronyms.
We do.
And while HRA and HSA sound like they'd be pretty similar, they are, but in the sense that you can use them to help save money on medical expenses, but the way that they're set up is very different. So as a review, an HSA is a health savings account, an HRA is a health reimbursement arrangement, kind of a mouthful. Basically, an HSA is owned by the employee, so the employee has the money and can walk away with that money, while an HRA is owned by the employer, and so the employer keeps the money. As far as funding goes, an HSA can be funded by the employee or by the employer and the employee, whereas an HRA is funded by the employer. So those are kind of the basic differences.
David, I'm sure you probably want to add on to that.
Absolutely, Dorothy. So it's important to understand what an HRA is. An HRA is an account that the employer provides to their employees to set up to pay for their medical expenses. This is approved by IRS Section 105, which allows employers to set aside monies to sponsor their employees' costs through this vessel, which is an HRA or health reimbursement arrangement.
Yeah, thank you very much for that. HRAs have been around for a long time, so why are they now becoming so popular?
Well, you were just mentioning inflation, and one of the things that has become an issue, right, is the cost of healthcare and then consequently the cost of premiums for those employers that are offering benefit plans to their employees. And these HRAs are becoming more and more popular as we're seeing employers trying to mitigate the increases of those renewals.
Exactly. And I could just add on, I believe the popularity in alternative funding strategies is really driven by those carrier rate increases, which ties back into inflation. Ultimately, when all is well and the plans are affordable, you don't really see a need to get creative in the cost-saving measures. So I think this is really the proponent that's driving popularity today.
Yes, absolutely. Can you give us some examples of current fully insured premiums from carriers and the increases that you've seen so far in 2023?
Well, so I can speak to the small group market mostly, which is where my business, most of my business lies. And as an example, in California, just to get some samples for you, we've seen PPO rate increases as high as 20% or more. We've seen HMO increases actually a little bit more than that, anywhere from 22 to 23% as high as. Wow. Of course, some of them are low. We've seen some decreases as well, but definitely we're up in the double digits. And even HSA, the high deductible health plans are HSA compatible. We're even seeing some of those rate increases in the double digits. And then anecdotally, I've heard as far as large group, some of our brokers have told us they're seeing renewals as high as 30% or more, which is shocking. It seems like we're going back a decade or so.
That's insane. And as you know, I deal in the large group market. So yeah, it's good for me that, you know, a lot of my clients are self-insured, but those that are fully insured, yeah, we're not looking forward to this fourth quarter coming up. That's for sure. David, did you want to chime in at all?
Yeah, absolutely. So over here in California, we have regional HMOs, and those typically have been single digit increases. Over the last 2 years post-COVID, we have seen double digit increases year over year. Now, it's incredibly unusual to see a client, once they move to a bronze or a high deductible health plan, to still continue to increase on double digits. But I have seen that now. This is the second year over. So this is more or less HRA 2.0 kind of conversations where we're trying to become creative inside of an alternative situation because the rate increases don't show any signs of slowing down.
Yeah, that's for sure. That's what I'm seeing too. So as an employer that's handed a renewal increase notice, you know, if you're there with them, you can see their jaws drop and their entire body language change. You know, their voices seem to get more tense. And so when that happens, what can we say to them as an alternative, particularly if they want to keep their current carrier? Because let's face it, sometimes their employees and the employer absolutely loves their current carrier and they've had some good overall experience with them. What do you say to them?
So what we're typically seeing is the TPA is brought in after the employer has received the carrier increase. So we don't per se see the initial reaction, but we do see is the subsequent reaction when they do see us and they are excited that we have some sort of alternative solution for them. Maybe Sue, you have experience delivering those renewals.
Oh gosh, yes, we're going back to my broker days. But I will say this, one of the things about small group is we know typically well ahead of time what those rates are going to be. So even if a formal renewal hasn't yet been delivered by the carrier, we can tell just by looking at the rates that have been published what kind of renewal we're looking at. And for the brokers that I work with, one of the cool things about knowing that ahead of time is we can arm them, if you want to call it that, with options before they go in to deliver this horrific renewal to their clients. And that's where we reach out to firms like David's to get a quote, to give them an option to change from their really rich plans they've got. Now we're talking about an employer that has really rich plans, give them an option to, on the face of it, reduce the cost by lowering their premiums, but still being able to offer the high level of benefits via the HRA. And of course, that's what we're here to talk about.
Right. Well, I am a broker, as you guys know, and I have been face to face with those employers when they get that news, and it's never good. Again, that's why I like to do a lot of self-insurance, but this is a good alternative for those that aren't self-insured. They're fully insured, but they need to do something to save some money this year and hopefully next year and in the future as well. So I think this is a really good alternative. As we talked about, the initial reaction from the employer, as we've all seen, is quite negative because the thought of raising a deductible drastically is not all that appealing, particularly to the human resources department. So how do we go about explaining to both the CFO and the financial types, as well as the human resources department, how adding an HRA to a high deductible, fully insured health plan can not only decrease costs, but can also give plan participants a rich benefit plan? You just talked about that a bit, Sue. What are the steps here?
Yeah, so I will say one of the, like I was mentioning, one of the cool things is when you know that the renewal is already coming in high before the broker even sets up that meeting with the employer, we can reach out to a firm like David's, present them with the quote for the lower option plan, either typically a bronze plan, sometimes a silver plan, that will greatly increase the deductible but lower the costs. We're able to give the broker and then the employer an illustration that shows them, you know, on a good year, on a scenario with a good year of claims, how much money they'll save, and even in a worst case scenario, how much money they will still save. I mean, I've seen up to six digits very easily, even on a group that's, you know, we would consider mid-range small group here in California, 55 to 60 life group, could easily save $140,000 to $150,000 if they have a good year in claims. Now, while, like you mentioned, the thought of raising the deductible for HR sounds horrible because they are going to have to try and communicate this to their employees. If the communication is done well, which is very incumbent upon the broker, and even in my role as a general agent, explaining this help or even helping the broker to explain it to the employer, for the HR folks, it's for them, right? It's communication to the employees. It's always the employees that are going to freak out. But if the communication is done well and it's a relatively seamless program like David's company offers, then explaining it to the HR becomes a little bit easier. I mean, for the CFO or the financial types, it's sort of a slam dunk. They see the savings and their eyes go wide, and they want you to explain to them that this is true. Like, this can actually happen. And if we illustrate it correctly, and the proposal should do that, then it's very easy for the CFO to be able to turn around, and the two of you together can go to the HR and explain how we're going to do this and how we're going to make the employees understand that they're still getting a quality plan. It's just the HRA is now going to lie in between this plan with a high deductible and the rich plan that they used to have. It's going to look like that rich plan, and we're going to make it as simple for them as possible.
Yeah. And Sue, you were talking about smaller groups. What about larger groups? David, why don't you kind of walk us through that? Because here in California, a large group starts at 100, where other states across the country, they may start at 50 along with the ACA. But part of the ACA, as you mentioned, were the metal tiers, and you mentioned the bronze plans. And for those that may not be familiar with that, that's the 60% benefit plan with a higher deductible. David, why don't you talk a little bit about your experience? Because I know that you guys work with a lot of 100 plus groups doing just this same concept that are fully insured.
Yeah, absolutely. So my experience typically is I have, with a technical background, I always come in with the technicalities. So you more or less, you want to start from the top. You want the owner and the CFO, the CEO to all buy in. So I really go with the term of we're optimizing cost efficiency. And then what that means is that we're going to go to a high deductible plan, and the cost savings that's yielded from going from a robust gold or platinum or what we typically say is low or non-deductible plan to a high deductible plan, we're seeing a significant amount of savings. And what we do is we then offset those medical costs with those savings in a simple to use method. So when we get through the conversation with the CEO and CFO, they're all excited and really happy. But when we use the word simple and easy to use, HR begins to scratch their heads, and they start to have a significant amount of disbelief, because there's nothing in the benefits or HR world that is cost efficient and also simple to use. So with that being said, we have, you know, different deliverables for open enrollment, but the conversation typically is easy to sell your CEO, CFO on a technical aspect. Your HR is the one that has a really hard time, because they already know the struggles that they're experiencing with their employees. And to more or less get this implemented and make it a viable solution is getting the HR buy-in, because the top is always going to want to save money. You have to get everyone else that's going to implement and support the plan to also buy in as well.
Yeah, I agree with that as well, 100%, because you're right. CFOs like to save money. Human resources like to make everybody happy.
Oh, and Dorothy, one more thing. I think that it's implied, but I guess we should just state it. One of the beautiful things about putting in an HRA is that you don't have to switch carriers. And so to your question, if the employees are happy with the carriers they've got, if they've got, you know, an HMO carrier and a PPO carrier that they're very happy with, they've got their doctors they love, this doesn't require switching carriers. And that's really the beauty of this, as far as for the HR professional that has to communicate this to the employees.
Yeah, very good point. What are the average reductions today in the fully insured premium world when you raise a high deductible from, say, $250 to $2,500 or higher, or $500 deductible to $5,000 or higher? We've seen them as high as $6,000, $7,000, $10,000. What are you seeing across the market?
Yeah. So again, in California, small group is under 100 employees. So that's still a fairly good size group. Just an example from a gold tier to, so in, as everyone knows, in small group, you have bronze, silver, gold, and then platinum being the highest. So from a gold plan to a silver plan in the HMO world, you're going to save around, I would say roughly about 18%. Same gold to silver and PPO, it's a little bit less, 14%. The big savings you're going to see, which makes sense, if you have a platinum plan, you're offering top tier benefits to your employees, and then you take it down to a bronze level plan. And in HMO, you're going to see upwards of 30% of a premium reduction. And then in a PPO going from platinum to bronze, you're talking about 40%. So there are significant reductions in premium in that arena.
Yeah, that's huge. That's huge. And I just want to restate that. And I know David can talk to this as well. But when you're talking a fully insured plan with 80 people or 120 people or 500 people, you know, that kind of increase is huge, huge dollar amounts to the bottom line. Huge, huge. So in case you were thinking you might have misheard that, you didn't mishear that. Okay. David, did you want to add to that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I typically see anywhere between 20 and 30%. And it's really dependent on the carrier, the location, and the richness of the plan. You know, we talked about gold or platinum or 250 to 2500. But I do see outside of California that your benefits spread is a little bit lower. For some reason, in California, we have much, much greater differentiation between your bronze and your platinum or your $5,000 deductible plan and your $500 deductible plan. You know, back east, we're seeing those numbers much closer together, so your yield is not as big, but we are seeing a significant amount of savings, and to the point where we are writing HRAs all over the country. So it's not something that's specific to California, but we are seeing the biggest rate differentials in California.
Well, thank you very much for that. Well, let's say an employer is somewhat open to seeing the HRA option, you know, with the higher deductible in their health plan. Can you give us some ideas on how to structure the benefits under the HRA? Because I think that's where people get really confused. Can they have first dollar benefits? You know, can they have low copays? You know, for those commonly utilized benefits like office visits and prescription drugs and so forth.
So in the small group arena, one of the cool things is that we can literally tell an employer, hey, that platinum plan that you have, you can still keep those benefits and we can move you to a bronze or silver plan so you can save money. So basically what we layer on top of that bronze or silver plan is a plan design that takes them right back to exactly mimic the benefits they had that we're changing. And so to the employees and their dependents, there's really no visible change to the benefits that they're used to getting with their doctors and with their other providers.
Perfect. Yeah. And to the contrast in large group and more or less what we're seeing with our high tech, we have our high tech and low tech models. So you have these blue collar workers on factory lines and then your high tech workers, which are, you know, startups that are, you know, with lots of funding. We're seeing this as a first dollar benefit covered at 100% using a smart Visa card that automatically substantiates at the point of service using the merchant code. Now, I've been doing this for over a decade now. And in the past, we typically would only see EOB-based or dual ID card-based HRAs, which Sue had discussed previously with copays and coinsurances and deductibles. I'm seeing that we're more or less getting away from that because the employer groups that we're seeing or that I'm working with most intimately are wanting to remove barriers to care and create simplistic benefit plans that are easy to use. So what I'm now seeing is only clients that are utilizing carriers that are smaller or have the capacity to do an EOB dump to EBAM where there is 100% capture rate where we're seeing markets that are wanting to go and explore those copays and coinsurances. Everybody else in my block of business is going for this 100% employer paid first dollar benefit automatically substantiated, which doesn't require any additional effort except using your Visa card to pay your provider at the point of service, and everything else is business as usual, as it would have been on your platinum plan.
Thank you for that. And we're going to come back to that debit card because I think that's a really important concept. But let me ask you a couple of questions first. What size employers, and I know, Sue, you're coming at this from a small group perspective and David from a large group perspective, because again, those larger small groups might actually want to do something like this as well. But what size employers are usually best for a high deductible health plan with an HRA, or does it matter?
Oh, in the small group side, you know, we can go fairly small. A lot of the times, and this might sound strange, but a lot of our smaller employers don't have an HR department or an HR person who's dedicated. And so whoever's administrating the benefits, it just sounds overwhelming to them to try and explain this. But when we have a champion inside that understands what we're trying to do, even if they're not a typical HR person, and sometimes it is the financial person, right, that can understand it and best communicate it to the employees. So for there's, I guess, two sides of it. Really, part of it is whether the employer feels comfortable in explaining this to their employees. But as far as like true financial looking at it, I typically will skew more towards at least 45 employees or more, 50 employees right around there is when you're going to start to see the most significant cost savings, especially if they're in a platinum plan. And then it makes sense to make the move because right there's that dollar amount where almost the pain of changing is too much for some employers. Again, with HRAs, though, they're not switching carriers. So you have that justification. Hey, we're not switching carriers. So while maybe this first year, you're only going to save, I'll just pick a number, $5,000. That's $5,000 you didn't have last year. So it really depends on the savviness, I guess, if you want to call it, of the employer.
Yeah. And David, what about you? What about the larger groups?
Yeah. So I would actually just say that it's more or less not the size of the employer, because there is a threshold that it makes absolute financial sense. But we don't typically see groups smaller than 25 lives wanting to even explore an HRA. With that being said, we do have clients that are 25 and below, but they're not using this necessarily to save money. They're using this to offer extremely rich benefits in a very competitive market. Now, you know, with that being said, if we're looking just for low hanging fruit, we're looking at high cost, low copay plans in the HMO market, specifically in California on Kaiser Large Group. If you have a non-deductible or low deductible plan, we have a 100% success rate. We can do it with our eyes closed. You have 25 to 30% savings on these. It's the lowest hanging fruit, I guess you should say.
Thank you for that. And we kind of talked about this earlier with plan design, but I want to come back to it because, again, it's important. What about the prescription drug plans? Because prescription drugs are something that even people that are extremely healthy might have, you know, a concern about, because that's something that employees use, you know, on a frequent basis. Even if they're very healthy, they may have at least some sort of prescription drug plan for someone in their family. So let's say they want to keep their low copay with the generic prescriptions at least. How would that work?
Yeah. So what I'm seeing on my side is the RX is really dependent on the carrier. So we have certain carriers that like to quote high deductible health plans with the RX as a carve out, meaning that you do have those copays separately. There's certain carriers such as Cigna that will work with you as a broker, as a producer, to create a custom plan where you can have a high deductible with the RX as a copay level. In the cases which you don't have control over those plans and you are required to have the RX subject to the medical deductible, we're seeing that just be part of the presentation and the proposal, using that on the Smart Visa card, covering those costs at 100%. Now, the main objective is to maintain a low copay to incentivize going to generic drugs. This would have to be done on a reimbursement basis. We do have several clients that started off on this reimbursement basis. But Dorothy, let's just be honest. If you have a client that wants to only charge $10 for a generic drug, if we cover that on the HRA, it's only $10 per fill. There's the needle on the savings doesn't move that much by covering prescription drugs. You're already subsidizing the major cost by having it covered on the HRA. So in my opinion, we don't necessarily see clients moving forward with this low copay. We actually incentivize them and kind of talk them into and guide them very gently into covering the entire cost on the HRA Visa card.
Well, thank you for that. I'm sure some people didn't even think about that and think that through. So that's very helpful. I want to come back to something that you said a few times. When you're setting up the HRA, you can use a debit card for services. And David, you've been talking about this, you know, over the course of a couple of questions here. Can you walk us through exactly how that debit card process works?
Yeah, absolutely. So before we talk about how it works, I want to talk about why it works. And the reason is that typically benefits are already complicated enough as it is, understanding what the copay is, what the cost is, et cetera. And then having a system in which you're requiring additional information, such as where's the EOB? What's my login for this carrier? Where do I have to send it? Which ID card do I use first? We are really seeing this debit card is more or less an all-encompassing solution. Now, with this card, we have the ability to limit your transaction amount. So, for example, if you want to only have $100 per transaction allowed, then the rest is going to be upon reimbursement. There's different ways to navigate that. But the debit card, in my opinion, has gotten to a level where it's so incredibly smart and it has the ability to be so tailored specific to the benefit plan, the location of the client, the specific needs and whatnot, that we have clients nowadays that are implementing these HRAs and coming back a week or two later saying, oh, by the way, we want to cover infertility. Oh, we want to cover this. And then we're able to add specific ICD codes or benefits on top of this as a stacked arrangement, which doesn't have any additional cost in terms of the administrative fee. But once it's developed and a program that's sustaining itself, we're able to customize and make it better and richer with minimal to no nuance.
And Sue, what's your experience been like with companies that are using debit cards? What's it like in the smaller group market?
In the small group market, I think one of the cool things that we can do is personalize it for the employer. So even if you're a small employer, it looks pretty cool to have a debit card, like a Visa card with your company's logo on it. There's just some sense of pride that employers get in that.
I didn't think about the pride part. Thank you for that. Mm-hmm. Well, especially for a smaller group, you know, that is kind of cool. If it's only a 50 life or 70 life or an 80 life group, that would be pretty cool for that. I like that idea. Thank you. I didn't think of that. I'm gonna give you credit mm-hmm. though if I bring that up again. Let's talk about the difference between a high utilization group and a low utilization group. How do you fund for, you know, that chance that certain expenses occur in the first couple of months? Because let's face it, some people are gonna go out and use those benefits immediately, and others might not use them for 3 or 4 or 5 months. Do you require a certain amount of funds up front from the employer to fund the claims that, you know, that are gonna come in from those people that wanna have those early claims in the first couple of months?
Yes, we have a new experience with our employer groups that are now wanting to have more seamless and timely processing of claims. To accomplish that and to have the spread between your low utilization and high utilization groups covered with no disruption is to require 2 months of average projected claims to be put up front as a deposit on file. So by having 2 months, even if we have a higher than average month, we still have enough money to cover the entire month and the replenishment time period. So there wouldn't ever be a period in which the claims are not being funded timely.
Let me ask you this. How do you determine what 2 months of claims are? Is it a percentage of the premiums? Is it a percentage? How do you calculate that?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's two factors. One's going to be the first question you ask is it medical only or is it medical and RX? So once you have yes RX or no RX, the next is going to be the group size. So we have 5 tiers that we break clients into. So depending on your size, we have an expected, a lower than expected and a higher than expected. And it's based off our block of business. And we've taken about 15 years of claims data and aggregated that. This is a moving target that we're continuing to chase. However, this is something that we publish as, you know, known data to our brokers so that they don't have to necessarily come back to us. They're able to use a chart to say which group size, which carrier coverage, this is where our projected is. Then you have a percentage of your max risk, divide that by 12, and then take 2 months.
Great. Thank you very much for explaining that. Well, there's obviously an administrative cost to setting up an HRA. Can you give us a range of, you know, what employers are seeing for administrative expenses?
Absolutely. Yep. So we see the market between $15 and $25. Now, there are other low-cost solutions between $5 and $10. However, if you're looking for a decent TPA with reporting and customer service, you're not going to find that below $20 per employee per month.
And that's what I was just going to ask, is that per employee per month? Yes, thank you.
So some employers think that having an HRA in addition to their health plan would be more burdensome administratively for the HR department or even the accounts payable and finance departments. How can you lessen that administrative burden? I know that sometimes people ask me, can the TPA do the billing for both the carrier and the HRA? Can they get just one payment for both? Or is that not something that they should be doing?
Yeah, I would recommend the employer keep them separate. Pay your bills directly to the carriers. Set up those payments with an EFT so they're automated. But I highly encourage you, even with an automated payment set up, to review the bill on a monthly basis. I think that consolidated billing takes away the freedom and the opportunity from the employer to do this self-service of making sure that everything is accurate on a monthly basis. We highly encourage our employer groups at EBAM to review this to make sure that all of your additions are on there, all your terminations are on there, and just more or less that you're having visibility into everything that's occurring and the timeliness.
Well, thank you for that.
So let's move on. I want to talk about long-term, potential for savings. How much can an employer expect to save in, say, the first year versus the first 5 years versus 10 years? Can you kind of walk us through that a little bit?
Sure. Yeah. So typically, we don't write an HRA with a client if they cannot realize savings in the first year. It wouldn't make financial sense to move to an HRA if it costs more money. And then when I use that reference point, I want to clarify, we're saying more than your renewal, because typically the client can't stay at their current plan. And we have a lot of misunderstanding when a client says, is this going to save me money? And you're saying, well, today you're paying $1 million per year on your premium. Next year, it's going to be $1.2 million. If on the HRA, we save you, we're only at $1.1 million, there is savings off of where you would have been, but you are not typically reducing your premium per se, going from that $1 million today, going to your HRA next year at $900,000. You typically see the rates are held more or less either consistent or lower than the renewal, not over the current. So it's important to keep track of that. We have now, with these extremely high rate increases, seen moving carriers present options to be kind of net zero. But that's, again, the answer to, am I saving money? It's always no from today, but yes to where you would have been if you did not implement this strategy.
There are also some advantages, not only of potential savings, but also knowing more about your claims activity, similar to what we see in the self-funding market. So, because basically that's what you're doing. You're self-funding the HRA. So what type of data, what type of reporting, et cetera, would the employer groups receive?
Yeah, so we have, depending on your employer group size, if you're a smaller group, we can start there. It's a little bit more simple. We have a monthly statement that shows you per employee utilization. That would be more or less to identify your spikers. There's not a lot of drill down data on the debit card system. If, as needed, we're able to pull transaction data, but it's not aggregated the way you would imagine on the self-funded market where you can see paid by service type. Because on the debit card, we're not using ICD codes. We're using MCC code. So MCC is merchant category code. So if you're a hospital, anything that happens at the hospital, inpatient, outpatient surgery, whatever it may be, everything at the hospital falls under that one merchant category code of hospitalization. So when we talk about data and drill down data, there's not that much that you would see. You are able to see what your spend is. You are able to see, what if it's gender driven or age driven, if it's, typically your young females are the higher cost individuals because they're having babies. But, with that being said, there's not as much drill down data as you would expect on your debit card HRAs. Now, on your EOB processing HRAs, which we haven't really dug into too much on this podcast, but there is the alternative of the old school dual logins where you have a login to your, let's just say, PPO carrier that you must receive your EOB, then present that to the TPA either through an automated system or a manual system. If we're doing that type of processing, we do then have the drill down data because we are seeing the ICD codes, which we're then able to categorize the same way that you would for a self-funded product.
Well, talking about self-funded products, I want to just ask you this question. Do you often see groups that are maybe the over 100 lives type of group, and they do this high deductible health plan with an HRA for a couple of years, and they start to see the data, they start to see the savings? Do you see some of these moving to true self-funding in a couple of years after starting this with a high deductible health plan and an HRA? Have you ever seen that happen? And does that happen?
Yes. So we have quite a few clients that we transition from a small group or a small self-funded arrangement to a fully self-funded. The way that I kind of sell this, when a client says, well, why don't we just go self-funded today? Well, we can, absolutely. The answer is there's no reason not to. But I believe that it's, you know, when you start to ride a bike, you like to have your training wheels on first. And then once you've gotten good without training wheels, you take those off. I think the HRA would be the bike with training wheels, so to speak, getting the client prepared to go to fully self-insured. With that being said, in my past 10 years, I have had clients that have gone from an HRA product to a self-insured product back to an HRA product. And I think it might have been a couple of anomalies because it doesn't make sense on paper. But when they were on the self-funded product, we were hitting the ag 2 or 3 years in a row. We then move them to a fully insured product with an HRA, and their utilization, now this is 4 years ago that transition happened back to fully insured, their utilization is under 10%, which is significantly lower than expected. I cannot make sense of this, but it's something that I have experienced. So there's not really a rhyme or a reason behind it. It's more or less, it's more comfort level with your client and, you know, this, however good your underwriter is. Cause I think in this case, the client was probably oversold on underwriting on self-funded, and then the renewals came in unrealistic. And so it more or less was a bait or switch in this specific scenario. But to answer your question, in a typical scenario, we very much see clients going from fully insured to HRA to self-funded.
Yeah. And that's been more my experience as well. Obviously, I've had some clients that have done that in the past, and they've said, well, do we need to go to level funding first before we go to traditional self-funding from coming from an HRA? And I always tell them, you can do that if you choose to, but you probably don't need to. But, you know, I show them both and see what works for them and what their comfort level is, for sure. Thank you for explaining that.
So how often would you recommend that the broker, the TPA, the employer, and everybody involved sit down and discuss the plans and what trends you see, since there are a lot of people that may not have the education on the HRA strategy, and some brokers don't even understand it? What questions should an employer be asking to make sure that their broker understands this strategy enough to properly advise them on it?
Sure. Yeah. So I believe in the first year after implementation that you should be checking in at least after the first month, once your administrative bill and your claims bill have been released. It's important for the client to have more or less a lot of hand holding in the beginning, because as we discussed previously about the automated bills or consolidated bills, this is not really an option. So what we do is we check in after the first month and we capture a majority of the issues. So typically, you know, where's my bill? How do I find my bill? Where, you know, what does this look like? How do I get a replacement card? A lot of those questions are directly answered in the first month. Then after that, we like to move to a quarterly basis, checking in every quarter until the first year passes. Then after your first year, I recommend checking in on a 6-month cadence so you're able to more or less get ahead of your renewal concerns or issues. But I don't think more than twice per year on a mature HRA is a little bit of overkill. And then to address your question regarding client questions to their broker, I think it'd be important for the client to ask, have you explored HRAs? What are the HRA regulations on my current plans? Is this something that we can explore together? And what are the negative repercussions in the broker's eyes to why they haven't done it in the past? And as an employer, I would highly encourage you to push your broker out of his comfort zone if this hasn't been presented to you, because you want to see this HRA solution. If it leads to you going fully self-funded and saving a significant amount of money, then it was a wonderful thing. If it doesn't fit and it's not a viable solution, your regulations don't allow you to have the HRA, then at least you ask the question and you can check the box off that you know the answer is no.
Sue, I want to ask you this because you work with a lot of brokers. What do you think that the experience level of brokers are for as far as working with HRAs. Do they really know a lot of in-depth information about HRAs, the majority of them, or just a small percentage? What do you think?
In my estimation, in the small group market, if it's a broker that particularly deals in small groups, there is a very small percentage out there that understands the HRA option. So if you are an employer, I would definitely, like David said, ask your broker. If you've never seen this option, ask your broker why, especially if last year's renewal was a high single digit or double digits. Know what questions to ask. So you've heard this podcast, you understand a little bit now about HRAs, ask your broker about them, because there are quite a few out there that don't understand this option. This is an option that is very viable. And if your broker doesn't understand it or doesn't, there are, and I will say there are some brokers out there who won't present it to you. I think that's the reality. I've run into some of them. Maybe it's because they don't understand it, or maybe it's because they don't want to even consider lowering their own commissions. So, and that's something to realize if you're an employer, but you are the client. And so you have the option to see this type of arrangement, if it's going to save you as an employer money, but still offer the same high level of benefits to your employees. So your concern is twofold, right? Keeping costs down, but also still offering high benefits to your employees. And so these are the questions that you should be asking your broker. Why am I not seeing this? Why are you not showing this to me as an option? And maybe it's time for you to reevaluate who you're doing business with. I mean, I'm sad to say that, but that's the reality, because we are seeing these high cost trends, and there is a viable option out there.
Yeah. They can always come to me and ask me for them, because I'll certainly help them with that. Anybody that listens to my podcast on a regular basis, I never actually talk about my own, you know, sales activity and things like that. But seriously, Sue has a great point in that, you know, some brokers don't want to sell it because they think their commissions might go down, because, you know, there are a lot of reasons why they may not want to sell it. They're saying, hey, the premiums are going down, so my commission's going to go down, so I don't want to present it. Well, you know what? That shouldn't be a consideration. And there are ways that the broker can still be compensated. But the bottom line is, as Sue said, if your broker isn't showing this to you, maybe you should be open to looking at other options from other brokers and so forth, and just see, make sure that you're getting the full story. Make sure that you're, you know, getting everything that you need to be able to make a good decision, especially with these high increases right now. David, did you want to add on to that at all?
No, I think that's really what it is. It comes down to, if you don't have a broker that's showing you the solution, I'd highly recommend reaching out to Dorothy. You know, and there's plenty of brokers out there that are willing to take a commission loss to improve the benefit for you as the client, the consumer. I think it's important to, the one thing I will add on to is, Sue mentioned that there's a commission cut. This is very typical, going from a rich benefit program to a low benefit program as a percentage. So for example, here in California, Kaiser will reduce your commission from upwards of 7% down to 3%, going from a platinum to a bronze plan. And so there's opportunities in that scenario where you don't need to, the broker doesn't necessarily take a commission loss. It could be made up on the administrative fee at the TPA level. So if your broker that you're working with is concerned about their bottom line, I would probably say fire them. And if you don't want to fire them, then you go ahead and tell them that they can build it back into the HRA, where you're getting the best of both worlds. You're getting the HRA and you're not losing your broker.
Right, right. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that information. About 70% or more of our listeners are CFOs, CEOs, COOs, human resources directors, and so forth. So what would you say to them as far as what they should be looking for in this year's renewal cycle?
Yeah. So if you are seeing those double digit increases coming in, or maybe they're even high single digits, but you're realizing that you want to mitigate that renewal, you still want to be able to offer great benefits to your employees, consider this option. And then I would even say, ask your broker, go out and get me this option. You know, as an employer, you need to know what all of your available options are out there to continue to give your employees the best benefits package they can get. And this is an opportunity to have a discussion with your broker. Talk to me about HRAs. Why haven't, and if they haven't told you about them, ask them. Don't be afraid to ask the question.
And don't be afraid to perhaps look at another broker that is offering those options. I just want to chime that in as well.
Absolutely. You've got to do what's best for your employees.
Yep. I think just to add on to that, the next thing is if you want to have a little bit more control over your benefit experience with your employees, if you're tired of explaining every year, your office visit copay is $20 this year, it's $25 next year, et cetera, this would be a great opportunity when you're looking at your renewal and this is the year that you want to take control of it. This is the year you ask your broker that you, about HRAs and see if this is a viable solution. If it's not just a financially viable solution, but just a solution that gives you more control and more visibility into how the health of your group is doing. Are they going for, you know, whatever type of visits? Are they going more into the hospital than the urgent care? Are they going to urgent care when it should be an office visit? This gives you a little bit of visibility. And by taking that control, you're able to then more or less mitigate high increases in the future because you're navigating your employees and creating a better experience for them, a higher level of understanding of what the best options are. How to leverage those.
Thank you very much. And thanks for all this valuable information. If any of our listeners would like to contact you, how would they do that, Sue?
The best way to reach me is actually on LinkedIn, because then you'll see my background and then my contact information is in there and let's connect. I'd love to talk to you more about this. So reach out to me on LinkedIn at Sue Wakamoto Lee.
David, how about you?
Perfect. Yeah. So I think for myself, LinkedIn is also a great option. If you're looking for a simple proposal or just want me to look at your renewal, we're happy to do that. The best way to reach out is sales@ebam.com. But if you're looking for a personal connection and you want me to help provide some insight or if you have additional questions, LinkedIn would be the best way to reach out to me.
Okay. Thank you very much. And thanks again for joining me today on this podcast. I really do appreciate it. You guys have been great.
Dorothy, thank you
You're
so
welcome.
Much. You know, I get super excited about HRAs. So when you wanted me to talk about them, I couldn't say no. Let's put it that way.
And I know you get excited about them. That's why I asked you to be on my podcast.
Yeah, me as well. And this has been my world for the last decade. So I'm really excited to be here, Dorothy. And thank you for thinking of me. And it's been a pleasure to be on this podcast and sharing some information. You know, if nothing else, hopefully somebody, you know, one employer group out there is going to realize that this is something they haven't seen before, have maybe never even heard of. And, you know, we have a new plan in place, stair-stepping them up to your self-funded product, Dorothy.
Thank you very much. For everybody else out there, please stay safe, stay healthy, and stay tuned for the next episode of the Benefits Executive Roundtable. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks for listening. Stay tuned for compliance tips, cost containment ideas, new trends, and decision-making tools. This podcast is produced by Advanced Benefit Consulting, Anaheim, California. All views expressed are those of the host or interviewees and not necessarily those of Advanced Benefit Consulting. Information contained herein should not be construed as legal advice. We always recommend that you consult with your legal counsel as situations do vary. Ms. Koshu can be reached at 714-693-9754 extension 3. Toll free at 866-658-3835 or visit our website at advancedbenefitconsulting.com.